Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
A drug designed to slow down cognitive decline in Alzheimer's may or may not be approved by the EU. We're waiting on a decision for that, which has led to some frustration amongst Alzheimer's experts that hailed the drug as a complete game changer. Research and policy manager at the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland, Laura O'Philbin, is with me on the line. Is the EU behind the likes of the US and the UK on this, Laura?
Good afternoon, Anna. Yes, I think it's really interesting because Leqembi is the first disease-modifying therapy for Alzheimer's disease to be approved by the European Medicines Agency. And to put this into context, the last drug that was approved was in 2002, and that was just to help with symptoms. So last week, the European Commission committee met and they couldn't reach a decision. So now the approval decision has been escalated to an appeal committee. And this is unprecedented. It's occurred probably less than 10 times in over 3,500 procedures since 2013. And I think what's really interesting about this is these drugs, both Leqembi and Kisunla, are available in other jurisdictions, even including our closest neighbour, the UK.
So it's a game-changing drug. We have the experts like yourself telling us that. So why is it being rejected or not getting through?
So it's game-changing scientifically, and we are in a new era of Alzheimer's treatments. The first drug, Kisunla, that is being rejected by the European Medicines Agency because they don't believe that the cost-risk benefit it matches up. They feel like the drug is too risky for the amount of difference that it makes. Now, we know that these drugs can slow cognitive decline by a small amount. It's only suitable for a small number of people. But scientifically, this is game-changing because we have finally reached this point we've been trying to reach for 20 years to actually show a disease modification in diseases like Alzheimer's disease. And for Leqembi, it's a very similar drug. It's given in the same way. And we're actually not sure why the European Commission has not reached a decision on that, because that has been approved twice by the European Medicines Agency. They approved it back in November. They reaffirmed their decision in February. So we would like to understand more about what this delay is with the European Commission and why have they escalated it to an appeals committee, given that the European Medicines Agency has said that it's safe enough and has said that it's effective enough for licensing.
If it gets through, Laura, can I ask you, what will the drug do potentially?
So the drug will be, as I said, be suitable for a very small number of people in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease, and it has been shown to slow the progression of the disease. So it's not a treatment. It won't necessarily improve things, but it will slow down the progression. So some colleagues in the UK have kind of likened this to maybe around at 6 months at the kind of more early moderate stages of dementia.
Okay. And, you know, Laura, I'm sure you'll agree with this, but, you know, much like cancer, I think every family in the country is touched by Alzheimer's in some shape or form. Like, it's a frightening disease, and it's not just the person who has it, it's the knock-on effects of all of their loved ones go through the sadness of this disease.
We estimate that around 64,000 people are living with dementia in Ireland, and for every one person living with dementia, we estimate that around 3 people around them are significantly impacted. So it is a very challenging disease. It is a very difficult disease. It's a hard diagnosis to get. And we don't have treatments here in Ireland, but what we do have are supports and services. And we go out into the communities with our supports and services to try and enable people to live as well as possible and for as long as possible.
Okay, so it's about support rather than treatment, I suppose, at the moment. Can I ask you, why was it approved so quickly elsewhere in the likes of the UK and the US?
Well, the clinical trials happened in the US, so the applications were made to the US a lot sooner than they were here. And then the approval process in the UK seems to be more swift than the approval process here. But, you know, we are seeing significant delays, and we're just very keen to understand why these delays are happening.
Of course. Clinical Director of the Institute of Memory and Cognition in Tala University Hospital, Professor Sean Kennelly, is on the line too. Sean, is this research being put into treating it?
Yeah, I mean, so listen, it's really good to get a chance to talk about this today. And while, know, this is a bit of a puzzling decision that's happening in Europe at the moment, whereby actually the experts have recommended it, as in the European Commission's experts for approving medicines is the European Medicines Agency, and they have twice said, yes, this medicine meets the regulatory threshold, and it's the European Commission themselves that are holding up the approval. But it comes against the backdrop of a general positive story, which is a recognition that dementia is entering into a phase whereby we can start looking to prevent it. So for years and for decades, since it was first described, we've really been in a state whereby we've been trying to manage symptoms of dementia. And, you know, we're now entering this new era whereby there are new medicines, and Leqembi is one of several new medicines that are coming through. There's about 130 agents in clinical trials at the moment, some of which are at very advanced stages, that are looking to manage these proteins that build up in the brain about 15 years before people develop symptoms, that we know that if we can alter how those proteins build up in the brain, we can significantly reduce the trajectory of cognitive decline. And as other agents come on board, we're entering this new era of, like cancer, chemotherapy to manage symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. And if you'd asked me, you know, 5 years ago, would we be able to prevent Alzheimer's disease definitively? Probably I would have said it is so complex, I'm not sure. But when we look at the artillery that's coming through clinical trials now, we are probably entering into a realm where that is beginning to become a real feasible target over the next decade or so. So it is a positive story about therapies, albeit that this is a puzzling segue.
Albeit it sounds like the EU are dragging their heels on this one in particular. What are the side effects of the medicines we're talking about here, Sean?
Yeah, so these, and there's kind of two medicines that are coming through, you know, quite quickly. One is called lecanemab and the other one is called donanemab. And they both work in a very similar fashion in that they target this protein amyloid that builds up in the brain that causes Alzheimer's disease. Unfortunately, when amyloid builds up in the brain of people with Alzheimer's disease, it's nearly like, if you can imagine, it gets in around the blood vessels and it's like the cement in around the bricks. And when we give medicines that removes that protein from the brain, unfortunately, the blood vessels become leaky and we develop a thing called ARIA. And those little leakages are mostly asymptomatic, but in a very small proportion of people, we can get little bleeds in the brain. And that's the most significant side effect that we see with it. And it's around a third of people might get the ARIA, but it's less than 2% of people that will have a significant reaction to it. But there has been some fatalities. There were 3 fatalities on the donanemab treatment, you know, that we're talking about as well. So there is significant concerns. Now, what we do know is those side effects are more common in people with a specific gene called the APOE4 gene. And where people have 2 copies of that gene, they're far, far more likely to have those side effects, which is why the regulatory authorities in the UK and in other countries have said, yes, give this medicine, but not to those people, because their risk of developing ARIA is much, much higher. So what we can already see is in this area, the same as in other areas, clinicians and science catches up with the evidence very, very quickly. So we've already been adapting how we would deliver these medicines, how we would manage people on these medicines, and how we would make them as safe as possible and try and ensure that only the people most likely to benefit would get them. So regulators kind of getting in the way of it really isn't helpful, because ultimately I think the big concern is the step change that needs to happen in services. We still have a lot of people who die with dementia who have never received a diagnosis. And that is, you know, really tragic in the context that we are able to give so much better and more accurate and timely diagnosis these days than we would have been able to a decade ago.
And Sean, can I just go back to that, the people who might not be suitable for these kind of groundbreaking medicines or drugs. Can you identify the people beforehand that wouldn't be suited to them?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, you can.
By straightforward genotyping tests. And in fact, that's what they're doing. So over in the UK, if people were traveling over to receive this in the UK, they would have their initial screening. They'd have identification that the protein that we want to target, amyloid, is in their brain. And then they would have their genotype testing to make sure that they weren't in the high risk group. And we would do that for a lot of medicines, as in oncologists, rheumatologists, gastroenterologists would do this for medicines with significant risk all the time. And these medicines aren't any different to what we would see with us.
OK, so this is an ongoing process for all sorts of different medications, which is very interesting. Is there any screening process at the moment, can I ask you, Sean?
So, I mean, the screening is always challenged because actually we're getting into the realm now whereby within the next year or so, we will have a clinically validated blood test to identify when people have this protein in the brain. And bear in mind that we can identify this protein many, many years before people have symptoms. So we're getting into the realm whereby screening all of a sudden is becoming feasible. The thing is it would be probably irresponsible to start screening in the absence of therapy
symptoms
to manage the condition. And that's why we need to have, if you like, the treatment artillery coming alongside our improved diagnostic capabilities. And we do need to see a step change. And I do think part of the reluctance for the commission to approve these medicines is they realize that we are looking at needing a significant investment in our clinical services for people who are living with memory symptoms. And while we have the National Dementia Service here in Ireland has made huge strides over the last few years in the investment in memory services around the country, we still need significant more investment in facilitating diagnosis of people with memory conditions.
And like everything, early prevention is the best kind, or certainly early identification, I suppose, in this case. Pat Stafford is on the line. Pat, your late husband suffered from advanced Alzheimer's and you would have cared for him. Would that be right?
Yes, it's right. Good afternoon.
Hi.
To everybody. What I'm hearing actually here in terms of the drug intervention is that early detection is kind of important to how effective the drug will be.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are cost implications, and that makes sense. My husband was diagnosed 5 years, properly diagnosed 5 years after I began to say something isn't right. And it was really difficult to get between his GP thinking, I don't know, you know, he seems okay, to his reluctance, because it is, you know, it's a hard thing to take on the chin. There's something wrong with you. Your thinking is wrong. And meanwhile, remember, he's out in the world and he's running a business and he's making decisions that perhaps he shouldn't be taking, you know. So,
and you know what, Pat, can I just say, there's men and women all over the country listening to your words, and they will resonate so strongly with them, because your partner in life is going to be the first to notice those symptoms.
Absolutely. There's the first diagnosis is made in the family, and then there is still difficulty today. I'm the admin of a Facebook group. We have over 4,000 members for carers of dementia patients, and one of the common threads on a daily basis is I spoke to my mom's GP. He wouldn't speak to me. She wouldn't speak to me. They said, oh, they didn't seem to be. They couldn't see that there was anything wrong. And you see, from my perspective, the cost savings are huge if this is diagnosed in time and if the drugs are administered in time. There's very little point in trying to administer 5 years in when the proteins have already begun to build in the brain. I don't know anything about the medical end, the medication end of it, by the way. I'm just listening to what the doctor is saying there. So screening to me is essential, number one. Number two, it's going to be cost effective because it'll keep people out of what is a very expensive system in terms of care as time goes on. I just don't understand the reluctance. I don't understand the reluctance to screen a whole population. So if you screen the whole population, you also get a mutualization of the problem. So we both have to go for screening. It isn't just you. And as this disease progresses, you get a certain amount of paranoia creeping in. Oh, you're trying to say there's something wrong with me. If we're both going for screening, it changes the subject somewhat. What stage you would choose it at, what age you would choose it at, is another question. I really don't know. What I know is that my husband was about 63 when I began to say something isn't right here. It was another 5 years before he had an accurate diagnosis. And by then, he was utterly paranoid. He wouldn't sign over, for instance, enduring power of attorney documents. Number one, he wouldn't. Number two, good chance he couldn't. You know that his capacity had reduced so much. Also, end of life, thinking ahead documents, deciding what it is you would like, you know, for your own future, can't be done once the capacity is reduced.
Of course.
So the consequences are... The consequences are extraordinary, and people who don't know anything about anything are left on a daily basis fighting fires.
Trying to figure it out. I think you're absolutely right. Calling for screening, universal screening, so no one feels that they're being picked out, would be absolutely incredible and would save the state a fortune, no doubt, down the line. I don't want to run out of time before I miss Kieran J. Coote, who wrote a book, Mam and Me, caring for his late mother through her Alzheimer's journey. Kieran, are you on the line with us?
Good afternoon, Anna. I am indeed.
You're going to break my heart with this book, are you?
No. It's got a bit of everything in it. It's just our story, you know, and I can well imagine it involves a bit of sadness and unhappiness and things like that. But you do find strength in there, and you do, you know, you find love, to be honest, you know. So all of them things are in there, you know. The book is a day in the life of caring for mom. Just the kind of actual you actually have to do during the day. And the second side of the book is mom's life story. So when you read it, you kind of, by the time you finish the book, you've spent a day with us together, but you've actually got mom's life story there. So it's not all doom and gloom, no.
No, it's real and it's honest. And as you say, the diagnosis is for both the patient and the carer.
Yeah, it's as everybody has been saying there, the diagnosis really is for the whole family. You know, everyone is affected by it. It's a strange illness because the patient usually doesn't even know they have it. And that can be very hard to manage that. Listen to what Pat was saying there about going to doctors and trying to, you know, I had to pretend with Mam that she was going for physical checkups when really it was a memory test we were doing, you know. And she was looking at me from under her eyebrows thinking, what the hell is all this, you know. So there's a little bit of that around in it. It is a very difficult diagnosis to deal with because everybody in every way is affected, you know, and mostly the person that you love. You
and I think the moments where you feel you've lost them are devastating, and then the moments where there might be this kind of lucid awareness are also heartbreaking. So the whole thing is actually just such a sad illness.
It's like the circle of life, really, because Mam in particular kind of went back to being a child almost, you know, in terms of forgetting different tasks and having to be minded full time. The line of care is difficult to gauge because you're never really sure where the person's at. And I found we're very, very reluctant to take anything away from Mam's independence, you know. So one day she's one way and the next day she's somewhere else. What I did notice, though, is once the drop happens, change in level, they don't go back. Stays there, and then you have to deal with that new reality. It's very much a thing if you haven't experienced it before that you're playing catch up all the time. So it is kind of difficult in lots of ways like that. You know?
Of course. Kieran, a brave book, Mam and Me, is out. I'm sure you can get your hands on it and lots of people will relate to it as well. Laura, can I just get a final line from you in terms of the drugs? What are the next steps?
So we're waiting, eagerly anticipating the decision of the European Commission, and that then we'll know a lot more. But what we do need and what we can't run away from is that we really need significant investment in our health services. Mm. And whether it's lecanemab, whether it's Kisunla, there, as Sean said, there are agents in the pipeline, there are drugs coming, and we need to be ready for them so that people living with dementia and their families have a choice. And I think it's really interesting there what Pat was saying, talking about, you know, reluctance. And that's something that we hear so much is people are reluctant to go and get a diagnosis. They don't want to know. And we have to think about it in the context of if that was maybe a cancer growth, people move quickly because they want to intervene quickly and look at treatment options. If we have those treatment options here, I think that reluctance will come down because people will feel more in control and that they can do something about it.
Of course. And the earlier, the better.
Exactly. We know more now than ever before about brain health and risk reduction. So it's never too early or too late, even if you're already living with dementia, to start thinking about your brain health.
Yeah.
And I'm just conscious for any of your listeners, this might have been a difficult conversation to listen to. We have a helpline. It's free and confidential. And the number is 1-800-341-341. And we would ask anyone to reach out to us if you're struggling, even if you just have a question. we're always here for you.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for that, Laura. No doubt a very difficult conversation for so many people around the country, and lots of things will have resonated there with our listeners. That's Dr. Laura O'Philbin. Thank you also to Professor Sean Connelly, Pat Stafford, running the Facebook page to get the screening up and going, and Kieran J. Coote, the author of Mam and Me. Thank you indeed for joining us.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.